This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, well, I'm very excited whenever I see Dion Chang because I know I'm in good company and I'm in the company of people who are thinking more about tomorrow than they are about yesterday. Now, you know, I'm obviously a person who's very interested in the trends, the technologies that are going to power us forward, the things that are happening in society. And we tend to get caught up in today's news. And we tend to let people like politicians determine for us where we spend most of our energy and our time. I think that's very dangerous because they're not necessarily the people who are thinking more about tomorrow, certainly not in ways other than their own personal benefit. And most politicians are only in it for themselves. And the news cycle tends to be negative. But as I said earlier, we're living in the best time that it's ever been possible for humans to exist. So stop feeling sorry for yourself. And if you focus more on what's going to come and how the world will improve and how we're going to have certain challenges that we might not expect, I think you'll have a much more positive outlook on life. And I'm always pleased to have Dion Chang around because he's got a very good hold on what's going on and what might happen next. And therefore, he can add some wisdom and some foresight to our journey. Today, as every time he pops in, I'm thrilled to welcome Dion Chang. Look at him, sitting over there. Right here. Looking very together. You always seem to me to be so serene and calm and collected. How do you get that right?
Morning, Gareth. I think it's a bit like those the ducks on the water.
Yeah, the feet are going crazy.
Paddling below the surface there.
How are you, Dion?
I'm very, very well. Thanks so much for inviting me back.
Sure. It's always good to see you. I know how busy you are, and it's good that we managed to find a gap in your schedule.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's trains, planes, and automobiles. That's my...
Yeah.
That's my life, and hopefully one day it's going to be trains, planes, and driverless cars.
Well, there we go, and we'll talk a little bit about those trends in a short while, but you are known to a lot of people for various reasons. Let's just give a quick synopsis here, and you can throw in where I leave out or change things that I might get wrong, because you are a very interesting person with many different hands and many different pots. So we've got fashion editor credits from Road Racer, Cosmopolitan, True Love, and Elle. Magazine career, which got you 5 Mondi Magazine Awards, 1 Pika Award for fashion journalism, and you were eventually awarded the Mondi Habitual Winner. I mean, when you get an award, they don't even bother to call it. They go, you're the Habitual Winner. You just can't help it. It's a habit that you keep winning awards. That was in 2004. And obviously, you've got many years of experience, 20 or more years of experience in predicting trends, in figuring out what's going next. And this all came about, first of all, as a result of your work in fashion, because fashion is all about predicting what's next, right?
Yeah, and the work in fashion was actually in fashion media, so it was you know, you've got to think ahead even then, and I think what was interesting about the magazine career was I was always at the startup of new things. I mean, strangely enough, I joined the Red Rooster team in 1990, and I think that was, they were trying to convert into a new South Africa. They were sort of seeing what was coming. I was part of the launch team for Elle magazine, so it was always at the start of stuff. And once I finished magazines, I also went on to assist with Lucilla Boysen, and she was just kickstarting South African Fashion Week. So I worked for many years there as a program director and a spokesman there. So you kind
and what
of
a
get
success
to know,
that's turned into.
Yeah,
too.
So I just sort of started figuring out what I really liked about stuff, and even in the fashion career, which is long gone and buried, is that I wasn't so much interested in the handbags and shoes, but I was interested in how the movement started. So what kickstarted the punk movement? What is this kind of...
Well, aren't fashion and music really on the cutting edge usually? Because the people in there are the ones who are creatively thinking about how to keep on top.
Absolutely, yeah. Except now, I feel in the 21st century, we've kind of stumbling on we're kind of in this cul-de-sac. So
I sometimes feel like that too. You know, if you have to hear one more person talking about drones and driverless cars and artificial intelligence and robots, you're going to throw up. It's enough already, right? But I do want to throw in, because that's absolutely only half the story that I've told so far. Flux Trends, which is, you know, that's the business you're involved in.
Yes.
You guys publish trend reports every quarter, which are industry specific. You've hosted innumerable conferences, you've spoken at innumerable conferences about the books that you've also put out. And I suppose it's worth saying that you write periodically for various other publications.
Yes, I write columns.
Yeah, you write
weekly and monthly columns. Yeah,
Sorbonne Magazine, Acumen.
Yeah,
City Press. So there's a lot of touch points here that you manage to not only give your expertise over in, but you also manage to reference a whole lot of other people, and you're always doing this research to try and figure out what might happen next.
Yeah, one of the things is the kind of the joy is a bit of a double-edged sword about what I do is you have to read constantly and you have to read everything, which is great because it feeds your brain all the time, but almost everything, every tab you open up on your computer, every newspaper, magazine, whatever, you're kind of absorbing, and trying to figure out sort of
patterns. Each one leads to 10 more because you see it, and then you see the headline that comes next, and you think, I've got to read that, and you could end up spending hours and hours in front of a computer.
I do.
Yeah, and eventually it takes its toll because you have to get up and move around a little
bit. Yeah, and you sometimes just got to stand back and really step away from the machines, but the kind of the joy is the variety. So I say to people, my weekend reading is everything from the Financial Times Weekender to People Magazine. Okay. Why the hell are you reading that? And I'm like, well, if I don't know what's happening, well, yeah, with the Kardashians or you know, how Beyonce or Jay-Z landed their album or which platform they're streaming on and what they're doing, you know, with Tidal, all of those kind of things. If I don't know those things, then I don't know my job. So.
Yes, and a lot of people profess to be intellectuals who are above that stuff.
Yes.
But they're actually just snobs, and they're missing out on important information.
So here's a really funny thing. It happened about 2 years ago. So, I studied fashion because I thought I wanted to be a designer. That didn't happen. Then I went into fashion media. Then I went into kind of fashion communications and kind of getting into the background of designers' lives and sort of helping put together ranges, which is sort of put me into the business section. Mm-hmm. Started this company, and then about 5 years ago, I pivoted within the business. So we use a mantra called Trends as Business Strategy. So most research companies just look at trends in terms of consumer mindset, looking at that kind of space. So we wanted to go, or I wanted to go into strategy and look at what was disrupting a lot of businesses. And thankfully, I timed it perfectly because all the new tech, digitization, everything was starting to really, really bring in and disrupt businesses. And that's when you got your new economies coming up, your gig economies, your sharing economies, your Lyfts, your Ubers, your Airbnbs, all of these new ways of doing things started coming just when I was starting to specialize and focus on that. So as a strange twist of fate, about 2 years ago, I started lecturing trend modules at business schools.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy to say this. I do not have an academic bone in my body. So, and now I, really great institutions like Gibbs or the Graduate Business School at UCT. I do senior management level programs, and with UCT I do some executive management programs just with CEOs.
Right.
So that kind of tells you that the stuff that I research and the stuff that we're looking at and the interconnectivity of all of these different disparate trends, which was sort of the soft stuff that didn't matter in business, has now become central to business. If you
that's why you read People Magazine.
Yes, exactly.
We can be snobs, and we could say, well, all you should really pay attention to is the goings on in the JSE. But you're missing out on the reasons that those goings on are happening on the JSE, because it is all interconnected.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's tech disruption, there's non-tech disruptions, there's a whole lot of undercurrents that you need to track and look for. And lucky enough, last year we celebrated our 10th anniversary, so I've been doing this for 10 years, and you kind of understand the patterns. You know what's going to just maybe be a flicker on the trend radar, but you know for certainty what is about to come, and that's why the things about drones and all of those kind of things. I know when or how, not exactly how soon they're going to land, but. It's going to happen, and with quite a lot of certainty that this is going to happen.
Now, you said that we're in a bit of a cul-de-sac at the moment.
Mm. Well, I think especially in trends like sort of in sectors like industry, people are going to not like this, but in fashion trends.
Yeah.
I think it's a quaint relic of the 20th century.
Okay, why do you say that?
Because I think there's a mega trend of individualism as well, and it's, you know, the technology, the way in which, you know, the digitization, even, you know, the content on magazines, on digital, all of those kind of things, everything's changed, and it really doesn't matter if pink is the new black or green is the new black, because people are just doing their own thing. So,
absolutely.
You know, and I always say, and you know, I was part of that. I was a magazine a fashion editor, and I said what digitization has done is taken the voice of authority away from those kind of people. They've become more of curators, and they present things to you. They don't dictate and say, this is the length of dress you must wear, all of that kind of stuff. So,
let me ask you this then, because if the trend is towards individuality, which I think is a very positive move for humanity, because we're all tired of being classified together in lumps and groups. And, you know, I spoke to the most fascinating guy the other day who's done a thesis on how there are no groups anymore. That even a marriage isn't a grouping of two people. It's actually just two individuals who are collaborating for the purpose of either raising children or sharing an economy together or whatever it might be. These moves away from the communal aren't necessarily all positive, but let's for a moment suspend all the negatives that may come in here. What does this mean for governments? What does this mean for businesses? And what does this mean for the kinds of associations that people have always had?
It's interesting because I've got some friends who are just creating, and that's bubbling up under the radar. So if you look at, say, education, it needs a major revamp. And we did a whole skills report, and we went back and to say, well, if this is the future of business, how do you feed the business with different skills? And do you fix tertiary? Do you fix secondary education? Do you fix primary? And, of course, you actually need to go all the way back and fix all the way primary. So you're getting these very different models of things. So somebody somewhere on Facebook must have shared, you must have seen a sort of Finland's way of doing topics and not subjects.
Everyone in
all
education
of that kind
is
of
talking about Finland. Why?
And because it's just we unschooling what we're doing. So if you look at, so to your point, so if you look at business, if you look at labor laws, if you look at the way corporates are structured, the whole, again, a quaint, obsolete thing of a 40-hour work week, 9-to-5. I say to people, why do we have to sit in traffic for an hour to 3 hours every single day, 5 days a week,
right,
so that we can all get to work at 9 o'clock and then finish at 5? And I do this at conferences I speak to, and I say, hands up anybody who has answered an email on their phone outside of office hours. So, of course, everybody puts their hands up. And I say, well, you're technically all remote workers, so why do we all have to do this? Can't we have a bit of flexibility to do that?
Right.
So if you think about it, to your question, all of the things, the models that we use, whether it's education, whether it's politics, whether it's business, were kind of post-industrial concepts. So even in education, we don't have to memorize everything. So that kind of schooling system is actually obsolete. You need to filter, find information, create new information out of that, and do things. So the business structures, silos, hierarchies, that's so not conducive to innovation, which everybody's trying to look for. So you're getting a sense that old systems are dying out. Well,
do we know yet what the best things to replace them might be?
We don't really, because we're kind of hurtling very fast into future. We're embracing new technologies which we're not quite sure what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But the signs are already there. So if you look at I think everybody is quite tired and depressed because you work 12 months in 6 months nowadays. So if you don't take a mid-year break, by the time you in October or November, you are going to crawl crying to the finishing line, and you're not going to manage. You're going to be burnt out and people feeling this. And you look, and everybody, like you said, gets really upset about local politics. And I say, you know, I've got friends they're Italians, they're living in London, so they're dealing with the whole Brexit thing. They, you know, I whine and moan about corruption. They say, you've got nothing on our corruption in Italy. You know, just park it there. You look at our president, then you look and have great Schadenfreude, and you look at America, and you go, well, yeah, welcome to the club and everything.
Or so Russia.
So there's this disruption, and there's new models sort of coming out, and those birthing pains are always very, very uncomfortable for a lot of people. If you look at just the trajectory of the young leaders in Ireland, 38 years old, Macron, there's a new guard that's sort of slowly starting to emerge. The fact, it was an amazing snapshot when they had, I think it was the, was it one of the summits, like a
G20
or something like that. And they had all the first wives' pictures.
Yes.
And there was a guy there.
Yeah.
And he was the first husband. He was like the first husband. I was like, yeah, that's coming out, you know. So all of these kind of things are just starting to emerge, and that's what makes me really, really happy. So I see all of the stuff that the possibilities that these shifting trends bring, while a lot of people see what is going to be lost.
Yeah, a lot of people are very hooked up on that, and let's talk about them for a moment, because they're not your enemies or my enemies, even though we're the kind of people who are more interested in the future than we are in the past. Yeah. These people are often, they're traditional, they like things the way that they are. You'd call them conservative politically, if you were looking at it ideologically. But they're probably under some duress and threat because they feel like they have to accept things they don't want to accept.
Yeah.
And if they don't, they'll be left behind.
Fundamentally, on how I'm sometimes introduced at when I give a keynote, I ask people to introduce me as a professional cage rattler, and that's kind of what I'm always asked by clients to do, is like, take us out of our industry, show us what's happening, and rattle some cages. And you get that a lot because you're seeing the top guys cruising along in the C-suite and not really wanting to change much.
Well, they're comfortable, right?
Yes, and meanwhile, everything below them is really churning, and things need to change, and that's kind of where I'm really, really happy and glad that I'm able to speak to those management structures and leaders in these business schools, because you can actually start shifting mindset and changing people's way of perception. Because going back, is people don't like the future because people don't like change. We like the status quo as it is, don't rock the boat, but we are in a very turbulent sea at the moment, and if you're not going to get seasick, then you know you've got a really strong constitution, because I think everybody is feeling a little bit seasick about where we're going out.
Sometimes it's just too much. You think, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
You know?
So I've actually, in the last couple of weeks, I've come across so many people. I don't know if they're just my peers, and maybe it's an age thing, but I don't think so. People are having a little bit of an existential crisis. Everyone is like, why am I doing this? Surely there's a better way of doing this. And so I think I
pretty... See, can I?
No. I'm like, so this will not end? I'll never figure life out?
You will figure life out. We've just got to kind of go through these birthing pains, and things have got to be shared.
For
you know,
30 years. But it's fine.
See, what Dion was saying earlier about how education used to work and how these hierarchical systems used to work, you would be born 100 years ago, 50 years ago even, and you would have a path, and you wouldn't be able to change your mind halfway through. So if you were going to be an engineer, you would have, first of all, you probably would have had to go to war. Then you would have been an engineer after that. And that would have been all there was for you in your future.
Mm.
And now, it's better to have an existential crisis and options than to be stuck like so many people used to be and just didn't have another way out.
So
is it surprising to you that we've taken this long to get to these points, though?
No, because I think our perception of time has speeded up in the digital era. We want things quickly, want things now.
Yeah.
But what's essentially happening, if you just stand back and look at it, is all of the systems that we are trying to change or breaking down have been standing there since the mid-20th century. So they've been 50 to 80 years, which is why I say to people with that are in legacy companies, when they say, you know, we are a proud legacy company, we've been around for 90 years or 80 years, I say, well, I wouldn't actually shout that out too loudly in this day and age, because it means that you siloed, you hierarchical, you can't really move with great agility. And that's the point, is these things are going to take a long time. We can't snap your fingers and change the education
system
overnight.
Not everything is fast food.
So, and that's why I think we've got this perception of time that just everything is, must be instantaneous. But these kind of things just don't change. And you know, we just see with in terms of what's happening with government, it's like a, how should I put this delicately, a really violent pimple that's just like slowly
yeah, it's
emerging.
Revolting. Yeah, that's
it's
right.
Revolting, but it's sort of emerging and coming out,
yeah.
And it's going to pop, but it's like, oh, gosh, yeah. So,
first of all, a lot of people ask, I'm sure you get asked this all the time, who do you look to as the people who are getting it right, as the people who are able to surf these waves at exactly the right time and are able to predict things? Who are your, I wouldn't say role models or mentors, but certainly the people you use as milestones sometimes for whether or not you're on the right track?
Yeah, well, I was really pleased. You mentioned like a Ray Kurzweil, you know, those kind of guys, the people that work. And it's not necessarily tech. It's just people that are able to make a bit of a change. So you look at the, I mean, it's very stereotypical, but sort of the Elon Musks of the world, and you know, that do things that just require grit and people that in the face of saying you can't do that, they've gone and done it and show that it's possible to do.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are just trapped also. They've got everyday expenses, they've got family responsibilities, they've got all of these things that hold them back, and justifiably so. We're not going to say that those people aren't making a contribution as a result. In fact, they're keeping society together. But you're outliers.
I'll give you a big example. So everybody, we're actually, you mentioned that we release these reports every quarter, and actually tonight we're launching a new retail report, because retail is just, there's blood on the floor everywhere.
Oh my God, it's disastrous.
So everybody looks at Amazon and Jeff Bezos as this is like the future.
Yeah.
We're actually saying to the tail end of our conclusion is we're actually looking at Jack Ma and Alibaba.
Uh-huh.
So this actually illustrates what we're talking about. So Jeff Bezos, yes, it's a fantastic company. There's a lot of tech. There's drone delivery. There's all of these new concepts there. Was the richest man in the world for, what?
A couple of hours
last week. But it's still a very old traditional capitalist system. He buys products. He'll sell them on. He'll grab a bit of profit. What Jack Ma and you see Alibaba and the retail sector in Asia, but mostly China.
And spreading all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I've used Alibaba.
Is a seamless integration of payment systems, of online, of bricks and mortar and everything. But the biggest fundamental difference between Jack Ma and Jeff Bezos is the way he approaches business. He wants to look for entrepreneurs. He wants to make sure they do well. And he's bought the networks of manufacture, of delivery, and all of that kind of stuff to enable these small businesses to join the Alibaba giant and actually prosper. That's a very fundamental and a very important
difference. Yes.
And that's why I said that's where actually the future of retail and business is going to be.
And you think it's maybe just because Bezos is in America and they've got a PR machine that they're not being compared equally or certainly being taken as seriously as each other, because I agree with you about Jack Ma. This guy is a genius.
He,
and what he's doing is very, very different to anything they're doing in the
Western. Last month, it's been really interesting, because Jack Ma he started this global roadshow. He appeared in Detroit.
Yes.
So, and I was saying, so what's Jack Ma and what's Alibaba kind of going into?
Of all places, Detroit.
Detroit, you know, and saying, this is your old motor city. It's an industry that died, and then he makes an appearance there. His next big international appearance was in Kenya.
Huh.
So you go, huh. Okay, so Detroit, Nairobi, what is happening here? And then I read, just coincidentally, somebody that was transferred to China for work.
Yes.
And he said the first month or so was hell, because he wasn't up to speed with all their mobile payment systems. So they said almost everybody uses a WeChat Pay wallet.
Yes.
When they go out. So your taxis, your everything is digital. It's a cashless society. And there he was still struggling to sign up to everything, and you know, going into a cab and saying, will you accept some cash? And they sort of looked at the stuff funny. And they go, yeah, I suppose so. It's really strange.
Begrudgingly.
Yeah. And he just said it was just such a huge adjustment to get into the society where everything is kind of fluid and seamless.
The idea of cards is so ridiculous to people in China. Why would you carry a payment card around that could be stolen, or cash that can be stolen?
Yeah.
You could just use your phone for all this stuff.
And that's what we're tracking, and that's what I find really interesting. So if you're talking about systems that are breaking down, so how's this for interesting business pivots? So Starbucks was the first company to actually create a internal payments system that was not in the financial services. So people say in America, they wanted to, you go past the same branch of Starbucks and you didn't want to wait in line, so you wanted to order with your phone, and then you would tap and go just for payments, so you didn't want to have to pay. So they created that payment system. Today, 12 million people are signed into that system. So the CEO, Howard Schultz, actually said they're going to pivot Starbucks into a mobile payment systems company.
Wow. And no longer coffee.
And then Snapchat, last year, filed for two licenses to be sort of mobile payments or that kind of e-commerce business. So you're seeing very different players come into very different areas of business, and that's what's going to kind of just destroy – well, not destroy, rebuild some an old system that we've kind of seen. And I think every single person who's listening has got their own story about their bank, their pain story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's just, why does it have to be like that? So if you've got a Snapchat or a Starbucks, and what's interesting, if you look at, we've got a millennial report, and we can also talk about Gen Z that's coming up. That's even more interesting. But especially a millennial generation actually said about 70% said they would actually rather do their banking or financial whatever they need to for their lives with a trusted brand, and it doesn't have to be a bank. So that's why your Starbucks or whatever is going to come in and take over. So yeah, Facebook or whatever is going to come in as a to a payment system and everything, and people go, I trust that bank versus whatever. I mean, I trust that brand versus whatever bank. And
this
I'd rather do that.
This is very threatening to banks and to governments and to established corporations, right?
Well, in the second quarter, we released a report about the future of fragmented finance. Okay, and what we said in that was the financial service sector is all waiting for this Uber moment. So what is going to be this big transformation that changes it? And we said it's already happened. You've actually got a whole lot of people nibbling away at your at the foundations of where financial services sit, and the big Uber moment is actually when everything just collapses into that abyss, because people have taken little bits and pieces out from under your noses, and it's your Starbucks, it's your Snapchat, it's all of these guys that are creating different ways of managing money or anything like that.
What do you think of these various new currencies and you know these new forms of money like
bitcoins and stuff? I think it's going to take a while because people are still suspicious, because the question I always get asked is so who controls the Bitcoin? You know, so there's not like a reserve bank that's, you know, or the World Bank that does that. So who monitors the Bitcoin? So
it's these ledgers which are constantly updated, which aren't actually held by anyone.
So, but that's what makes people nervous, because it steps out of a traditional, you know, comfort
zone.
We like
to know someone's in charge, right?
Exactly,
and usually we like it to be someone we like.
Yes. So and maybe you don't actually even know who's actually behind these things anymore. But I'll give you one example. So I show this. It's an American thing. So unfortunately, it's not in South Africa, but it's a good idea. It's a brilliant idea anyway. So there's an app that has a hashtag called Sumday, SUMDAY.
Okay.
But it's a new social media linked financial service, specifically for a millennial user. So what you do is you decide how much you want to invest every single time you use the hashtag Sumday. Okay, so from your bank account, it goes into an investment account. So as you go about your day, you see a pair of shoes that you want that you can't afford. So you take a picture of that and you hashtag Sumday.
This is a daily occurrence in my life.
And every time that hashtag, or you go to a restaurant, I can't afford to eat there, but I'll take a picture of that Sumday there, or the holiday, whatever. Every single time you put the hashtag Sumday onto your social media, it withdraws a little bit from your account and it puts it into this investment and into things. So you are consciously, visually using social media to save and invest for your future.
Fantastic.
It's those kind of things that you go, wow,
that's really clever.
That's, it's amazing. It's like, okay, that's fine. Yeah, that's going to work.
What do you think the scariest part? I mean, you mentioned Generation Z just now. What are their interests? What are their primary concerns? And how's that changed from, you know, the generation of our parents to us to millennials to Generation Z? What's the difference?
So here? Just to clarify for listeners, Generation Z are essentially your teenagers and adolescents. So yeah. from your early teens
yeah.
up to now 18, 19, going to your 20s, and then the millennials take over. So this is a generation. So firstly, the mindset is completely different because these are your true digital natives. They do not know anything. They don't understand the concept of new technology because everything is as it is. We don't have a world without internet. We don't have a world without smartphones. And absolutely. We don't have a world without Google.
Yes.
So I always tell parents, unfortunately, you are no longer the font of wisdom for your child. Google is the font of wisdom. And that in itself has changed a lot of habits. Because
I've never thought of it that way.
But think of it this way. They don't wait. If they go to school, so this is another curveball for schooling. They don't wait and say, see, what is this, this, and this, and this? I'll just Google it. You don't have to tell me about it. So that changes the whole dynamic between a teacher and a student, because if I'm not going to keep asking you questions because I can just Google it,
your
then...
Your teacher doesn't have to be cleverer than you.
Exactly.
And your teacher doesn't have to know everything.
And they've got to... That's why the teacher's got to guide and do kind of things. So not only is their font of wisdom Google, they also have... They are a post-9/11 generation. They are now a post-Great Recession generation. They understand, they've seen their parents or grandparents' pensions just evaporate because of corruption. They've been handed a really damaged earth.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole framing of what they see. There was a woman who presented a paper at the UN, and she called them generation from the Hunger Games. Katniss Generation K. Yeah. So.
Right.
She said this is the same kind of generation. Now, they have this dystopian outlook on life, and so they want to make things better. So they are very savvy about saving, about kind of looking at jobs and their futures and stuff like that. So it's a very, very different one. So if we then layer that onto retail or what we're going to present tonight, is if you think about, let's just say, the concept of malls.
Yes.
We are in South Africa. We've got this whole thing about my mall is bigger than your mall.
Okay. We've got so many, right?
Exactly.
They can't all sustain.
No, they can't. But this is the scary thing. So if we are where America was in the 1990s with malls, then if you look at what's happening with malls in America now, that's not a good prognosis of where we're going.
Many of these will be derelict soon.
Then if you layer that on with the whole how Gen Z behaves and shops, and they have already been almost controlling the purse strings of a household unknowingly, because you say, oh, we need a new fridge, we need a new whatever. Who in the house does the online research?
The kids. Yeah.
You do that. You advise all of those kind of things. So they're now starting to come out of school. They're going to go to varsity. They're going to start working. And if you think about the mall, a mall was a gathering place, a commercial town square where you went to movies, where you had your first date, where you had all of those kind of things. That all doesn't happen in a physical space anymore, or doesn't need to happen in a physical space. So that's why the functionality of a mall is fast becoming obsolete. So,
but you don't need to shop even
in
a mall anymore.
I call myself a stealth bomber shopper. Okay.
Yeah.
So I do all of my my pre-shopping online. I find out where it is. If I can't order it online and I have to go to a physical store and it has to be in a mall, I park at the closest entrance that I need to get in.
You run in, get what you need, get out.
That I don't have to go through to the other side of the mall.
Right.
So there's no browsing, there's no...
And you've researched that online too.
That online too. And you get in, you get out, and you go.
You don't browse.
I think many people don't browse anymore.
No.
We just don't have the time. So you might have some people that are peri-urban people that come in and want to go to the Mall of Africa or some and see, but they're not shopping.
Where is this going to put retail? I mean, if you were an owner of a franchise of clothing stores right now, you're listening to this and you're terrified. What does it mean for you?
It means you need to look at the new rules of retail. So I think because of my magazine background, I like nice titles. So the title for tonight's report is "Once More with Feeling: The New Rules of Retail." And I think that's it. We kind of, you know, you had this. It's been going from bricks to clicks, and there's just been these sort of warning signals coming over and over again, and we've not really gotten through to it. So now this is like these are the new rules. So just take clothing retail, for example. So one of the problems, I think, with retail, and especially malls, and Stutterfords died this week on the 1st of August.
Everybody's talking about that, huh?
So, you know, so that's another retail model that's kind of gone.
It's failed.
We don't need it anymore. It was a store within a store. Mm-hmm. You had little brands there, but what department stores have become landlords to brands.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a bit of a space, okay, put your brand there, and we're not really curating it very much. So,
and
people are starting to say now, especially with online, you don't need 5-6 branches of the same retail in one city. You need maybe one big flagship store, maybe two, but you don't need all of this kind of stuff. So to your answer, what we're unpacking is, and that's what I find really fascinating, is the the term the last mile of getting your product to the customer. The last mile is on demand and digitized now. So there's a whole new space. I refer to Harry Potter, platform 9 3/4. There's something in between. We're not quite sure where it is, and we're not exactly sure how to get there, but it's there. So, for example, I'll give you a case study. So it's a company in Antwerp. It would be a Scandinavian company. They've started collaborating with the hospitality industry.
Yeah.
So I've seen quite a few models of this. So these ones, because it's especially fashion retail, they're targeting at the moment predominantly female business travelers. They put a little mini boutique inside your hotel room. And it's actually, and it has a menu, beautiful menu, like your mini bar menu, mm-hmm. but it's a mini wardrobe menu. So you're on business and you're invited to this dinner. Oh, crap, I don't have like this dress or this accessory or these heels. I'll do that. It's raining outside. I need a trench coat. They've got it all for you. And you just pay as you check out as part of that thing. So it's extending your store concept outside of the physical realm. That's it's fantastic. Not online, but it's somewhere else.
Yeah.
Platform 9 3/4. And it's doing that. And we're starting to see a lot of stuff where the thing comes to you. So we're actually opening the presentation tonight as a short video. It's a beta testing thing in Shanghai. That's what I say. Just go east for the future of retail. It's a autonomous roving superette that kind of just travels around different neighborhoods. So the video that actually shows is a girl, she's been in a club, she's all hot and sweaty. Then she wants to find her nearest supermarket. I think it's called a Mobi.
Mm-hmm.
So she looks on the app. There's a Mobi coming around there. It stops in. She's signed up, so again, payment systems, all of that. With her phone, it allows her access. There's a hologram of somebody who says, "Hello, Gareth. Welcome back to the store," whatever. You go and pick, all of those kind of things. And I think many people might have seen the Amazon Go video where you just pick stuff and there's sensors. So whatever you put into your shopping basket, it just adds to your account and you walk out of this mobile store. But the extra thing on this store is if you're going for that after club breakfast, then you don't want to take your purchases with you. There are drones embedded in the roof.
Stop.
And then you can actually just get them to deliver it at home for you if you don't want to schlep it around with you and everything. So this is like real futuristic. Well, not futuristic stuff because it's in beta testing.
Already.
It's happening.
No.
It's a beta test, so it's not rolled out. But there's one roving around the streets of Shanghai, and that's kind of doing things.
What is the future of money? A lot of people are, particularly when they talk about millennials, Generation Z, their attitude to money and the way that they perceive wealth or or financial independence is very different to the way that previous generations.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's another thing that's hitting retail. So what we're calling what's hitting retail is a perfect storm. So there's a whole lot of stuff. It's the death of malls. It's this. It's Gen Z. It's a way of shopping. All of that kind of stuff. And the whole mantra of less stuff, more stories is really kicking in. So I call it a concept of transient ownership. We're understanding that we don't need to own the stuff to be able to use it or experience it. And in that, so it's everything from your Ubers to that kind of stuff. It's you can just hire the stuff. You don't have to really own it. And then with that becomes the experience becomes a form of luxury. So what they're saying is, in terms of money, we need that kind of stuff, but the experiences of how the freedom to travel or to work differently is a much better way of saying I'm time and place rich. I'm not financially rich. So you are able to do that. So my niece in New York is for me the quintessential millennial.
Okay. Yes.
I have no idea what she studied. She studied these like a whole lot of little different things. She's upskilled herself already twice in her 20s. Okay. Yeah. She's already done something. She's done a UX course. She's done this. As a result, she's now worked out. So she's a proper gig worker. She keeps getting contracts because she keeps getting skills that people really want, all of these companies that really want. And she's worked at a finance company. She's worked at stuff that she does, UX, everything. So it's all stuff that is enabling a digital way of doing business. So she's always in great demand. They're always offering her a permanent job. She keeps saying, thank you, but no thank you. You can up my hourly rate, but I don't want to work for you permanently. Huh. But she's good at her stuff, so they keep employing her. So what she's worked out is, these are the number of hours I need to pay my bills, to pay rent, to do this. She and her boyfriend travel. They're the quintessential slashies. They do multiple jobs all at the same time. And then she's worked out, if I work those number of hours, I can devote these number of hours to my passion project, which is a film script, which is quite advanced, and she's got mentors and stuff that are doing things. So she's actually getting it all, doing it. And she and her boyfriend do these multiple gigs, and they travel. So wherever they can, they travel, they are able to work, and they can work remotely. And that, for me, is like the future of where we're going, and that, for me, is the luxury.
That's amazing.
Your time and location.
I like this idea of this transient ownership.
It makes a lot of sense.
It's like you can have the milk from the cow, but you don't have to own the cow and feed the cow and have the farm.
Exactly.
And all of that stuff.
So, you know,
It also changes a little bit about the conspicuous consumption, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because that stuff feels old now.
Yeah.
When you see, like, rappers with bottles of champagne and gold chains, and it just feels dated.
And then if you layer that on and you look at the Gen Z perspective, that's really off-putting.
Yeah.
It's a bygone era, which is not so sure if that really fits in now.
And people who don't care about the environment, and people who are destructive and who don't have an idea of how humanity should improve.
Sure.
Those people are very off-putting to Gen Z and millennials
as
well.
And what I'm seeing is the use of tech for greater good. And boy, have I seen just some amazing things. So let me share this with you. I shared it with the company I was working with yesterday. Because if we're talking, so if I talk about drone deliveries and an on-demand and digitized last mile, people will say, well, that's not going to happen in Africa or South Africa. How can you deliver to Diepsloot or where there's no grid system, there's no street, street names or any system like that? Well, firstly, India figured that out. So they can now deliver to your phone. So they just deliver to your geotag.
Yeah, wherever your location pin is dropped, yeah.
Yeah. So then the counter argument is, well, then not everybody's got a smartphone. So part of the joy of my job is to travel and go to whatever conference anywhere in the world, because it's all work for me. And so I went to an amazing one in May in New York. And there was this woman who spoke from a company called What Three Words. And they actually, what really resonated and, of course, was shocked with me was the video she showed was a case study they did in KZN. So I'm sitting in New York with a woman from a British company, and there's a video about KZN.
And there's some intel about KZN.
I was going, what's going on here?
So what did she say?
What Three Words is a brilliant system. They have spliced the entire planet up into a grid of 3 by 3 meter squares.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Each 3 meter square has three words, very random words. So we're sitting a couple of meters away. So your three words would be bowl, desk, water. Okay. I would be piano, chair, table here.
Right.
Every single 3 square meters, there's something like 23 trillion squares on the earth. Uh-huh. They have assigned random three words to it.
So assigned, or is it the three words that those users have?
No, they have assigned. Oh, okay. So you find yourself on the app, you find your 3 square meters, and that is what those three things. So the point of this,
I saw this at Design in Dubai this year, actually.
Yes, they were also there. So the point of that is, they said, if you, the case study that they showed at KZN was, they've been having a lot of women dying because they've had problems in pregnancy, and they can't get the ambulance there because the ambulance can't find the house. What three words means, you can find exactly where it is up to those 3 square meters.
Ah, so it's a way of
geo-mapping the entire planet with three words. Okay. Yeah. So they said, even if you go to a concert or a sports event, you say, okay, meet me at the stadium. Which entrance? Yeah,
sure.
What three words will give you exactly in that 3 square meters?
And in 3 square meters, you can find anything, right?
You can find absolutely everything. So the one country they said that adopted it first was, and it made sense, was Mongolia. You know,
huge steps.
Yes.
Massive amounts
of
space.
Where do I deliver? The second sand dune on the left, and not the oasis with the two palm trees, the one with three palm trees. Yeah. You know, it's like, no. Right. So what three words is. And I just thought, so if you look at the kind of the tech and the concepts that are happening there, it is going to just smash any, well, we can't do this, we can't do that, because all of the stuff, the new tech is coming through, and it's enabling all of the stuff that we can do. So when people say to me, we can't deliver by drones in, you know, I love the pessimism of South Africans. They're like, well, someone's going to shoot my drone down and steal my stuff. Well, that might be the case. But then I say to the insurance companies, well, are you working on a short-term insurance product about somebody's shooting down somebody's drone and stealing the stuff? You know, there's an opportunity there. There's a lot of business opportunities there. So, you know, when people say to me that, I say, well, then why are they delivering blood supplies in Rwanda by drone, which they are? So, you know, it's happening here and it started happening last year already. So because of the terrain is so bad in Rwanda, you can't get an ambulance to there to deliver. So you just sling it by drone and you deliver it there. So it's, yeah.
I love this. We could talk all day, and I wouldn't run out of things to ask you and time to hear your stories and the experiences you've had. But what do you think for South Africa? I mean, this is really the thing that is, I suppose, preoccupying a lot of us at the moment.
Yeah.
What do you think is likely to happen here? Because a lot of people are very pessimistic and a lot of people are very optimistic. Obviously, it is what it is.
Yeah.
What do you think it's going to be?
I see a very long 6 months up to December.
Yeah.
Depending on what happens on Tuesday next week. Mm-hmm. But I see a very, very long, protracted 6 months with a battle of who's going to become that. And I think that's really pivotal, because if you look, just drive along here, just listening to kind of news reports, another service delivery protest, another protest about this, another protest about this, more kind of funds going missing and whatever. And, you know, that just starts, if we can fix the admin.
Yeah.
And I think our admin has really gone down the tube. Then we can start progressing, because there's a lot of stuff that's happening that's very, very good. But we're not giving that enabling environment to be able to do that. But I do sense some change. There is something that is happening, whether it's as far as the Bell Pottinger hearing case in the UK or whatever, there is something is happening, and it might be a very slow, protracted process, but we shall heal.
And just hang in there, because this environment creates huge amounts of opportunity.
Well, to do a whole Zen kind of thing, but also a trends kind of thing, this too shall pass. It really will. It really will. And something new is going to come along. And like you said, when we started, if I look at again, like the tech, the stuff for greater good, where businesses are going, all of that kind of thing, overall, it's a very, very good trajectory. We're gonna get to a better place. But sometimes we've got to break down what we need to do, and to use that old adage, you've got to break some eggs to make that omelet. So we're going to make one big hell of a fluffy omelet, but there's going to be a lot of broken eggs.
Right, get ready for it. I think the right kind of eggs are going to break, if you ask me. Thank you, Dion Chang.
Thank you so much.
It was nice to talk to you, sir. And I didn't realize this, but I didn't know you were born in Pretoria.
Yes, I'm a Pretoria guy.
This is CliffCentral.com.